Welcome to Untold. We're back for another episode. As you know, at Untold, we go behind the scenes. We speak to leaders, entrepreneurs, business leaders, and thought leaders in the food and drink space. Today, I've got a really, really exciting guest who we're broadening our industry, bringing him in, and I'm super excited to really get under the skin of it. I'm going to introduce to James Sterling, also known as London Fitness Guy. And he's going to give you a bit of an introduction. James, how are you doing?
Oh, it's good to be here. Yay. I've got a coffee in hand. It's 4:30. I shouldn't be drinking coffee that time.
No, no.
I'm doing it anyway for the benefit of the show.
That's it. It's got to be done.
But yeah, it's great to be here. Obviously, my name's James. My name is also London Fitness Guy from social media. And predominantly, my business is around fitness provision, workouts online, retreats. I've got some exciting things on the go at the moment as well. But yeah, it's really good to be talking to you about my business and my struggles with this business over the years. It's been 7 years now, many ups and downs. Fitness in a pandemic is always interesting. So I feel we'll have a good chat. And I look forward to it.
Yeah, man, amazing. I think there's loads of lessons. I first met James, I saw him on Instagram probably about 4 years ago now.
It feels like a lifetime ago, but it probably was 4 years ago.
Yeah, and reached out for some advice on PT. I think on your profile at the time, you had trained someone from the X Factor, and that hooked me in. I was like, I need to speak to this guy about losing some fucking weight. And we sit here today. I've just done sort of a half marathon to get into work. I was joking. For listeners, I look exactly the same as I did when I first contacted James.
But not because of my personal
outrageous from me. No, and we had a lot of fun through the years, and then became friends. So it's really nice to sort of bring you on. I guess that a good way to kick off would just be sort of what mental health means to you, because it's such a broad spectrum of things, and your own journey of mental health, and then we can kind of come on to other things and how.
Yeah,
that's
really interesting. I guess growing up, I've always been into fitness. But I guess the real focus in the early days of my own fitness journey was to try and look good. I think everyone starts off with the ambition of trying to look like a cover model, you know, what you used to see on Men's Health. And that was what I started off doing. But nowadays, my own journey with fitness is really for my mental health. I've had some really interesting struggles in my own mental health, especially over the last 3 years. So fitness plays such an important role in allowing me to feel me and lifting a lot of weight. Running a business is tough, as many listeners will know, and it just gives me an opportunity to switch off from my phone, not think about emails, not think about what I have to do for the rest of the day, and just be present for 45 minutes to an hour most mornings.
Yeah, I think it's amazing, and I think there's also an element of routine in there, right? Having that, like, my wife and I recently got a dog, and for me now, that sort of fitness space, like I've started playing a lot of tennis and blah, 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 but it's a similar kind of just on the common for a walk, and it's 7 a.m. every single morning on the common, and it's that, I think with fitness becomes that kind of non-negotiable, so you're up and you're out, and that's the start to your day.
Yeah, absolutely, and learning a new skill, I think, is something that everyone should do as they get older, if they can, whether it be learning tennis, golf, learning to play the keyboard, anything like that, where it's a full distraction to be present and not think about everything else that swamps your mind on a daily basis, is something we should all strive to do.
Yeah, amazing. And I think there's a sort of really nice segue there, like for our listeners running businesses, wanting to run businesses, or kind of being in roles where they're managing teams. A lot of the time we're using our phones and computers, and we're sat at screens, but for you, who's built an unbelievable follower count, you must get to a point where you're like, fuck, I'm using my phone a lot, because if you haven't got that following and it's not directly linked to an app, you're still at a screen, but it's not, I can't imagine what it's like seeing all those notifications. Like, walk us through how you manage
that. Yeah, I mean, it's a strange world, social media, because it feels like you're always involved in it, but actually over the last couple of years, I've got a lot better at it. It probably sounds a lot to say I spend 2 hours a day on Instagram, but I set a block on that 2 hours, and I get a pop-up when I've spent over that, or when I'm nearing it, and then I try and shut down my usage. But for me, social media is very different to how someone else might use it. For me, it's a lot of research to see what people are doing. It's a lot of trending videos to see what I can tap into.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah,
it's a lot of responding to comments, DMs, and trying to help people. The whole part of Instagram for me was to share my passion and share my workouts and share my philosophies and ethos. And it still fundamentally is that. But at the moment, with the introduction of Reels and all these crazy things that are going on, it's really important for me to mentally stay in that lane and keep that focus and not get wrapped up in a lot of the other stuff, the noise that, that surrounds it.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, it's straightforward, right? If you're in it, you've got to be involved in that. It's like running a food business and not knowing who your competitor is, right? It's a similar sort of thing. And I think it's an absolute minefield. Like for you're obviously a pro at it, right? But for brands that are kind of starting out and trying to get their follower count up, we hear a lot of people talk about kind of, oh, my followers are quite low, et cetera. Like, talk us through the sort of, we'll come on to everything else, but I guess at the start, talk us through kind of how you started and how that started to grow, and then kind of maybe put a bit of tangibility behind what your following is now, and just so we can give a bit of colour to the listeners.
Yeah, so to give some context, I actually have two accounts. My main one, which is London Fitness Guy, which has 568, to be precise.
Not that you can.
Yeah, 568. I was doing a bit of my own mapping before I came in here, but 568,000 on there. And I have my business account, which is called Power, which is my workout program, and that's got 105,000 on there.
Wow.
But what's been really interesting is a journey through Power, through that Instagram account that launched in January. So in 8 months, it's grown over 100,000, which is really interesting. I'm sure that's probably of more interest to a lot of people that are listening. And it's something I speak to brands about and how they can grow their own Instagram accounts. And it's really, again, come from knowing what works, how you present your message, how you tap into trending sounds, trending videos, but still stay true to your values. And for me, through Power, it's very similar to my own account. I want to help people learn how to exercise, how to access accessible workouts, and I've stuck true to that, and that following's come off the back of that, really.
Yeah.
So amazing. When a brand is looking to grow their own Instagram, I think first of all you have to look at what you share and how you share your message and your ethos through the content you create.
Yeah.
And that should be first and foremost to anything you put out there on a weekly basis.
Yeah. I think that's just a world class lesson there, because what you're bringing to your consumers is value, right? There's this huge amount of value add in following you personally, but also your Power account, because they can go on there and then copy, download, follow your workouts that you're putting out.
Yeah.
As someone that's kind of in that sphere and they respect, they can do it quickly. And I think it's super hard we absolutely have not nailed our social at all yet. We're sort of still in that journey of trying to work out what it is, but you see a lot of brands that are kind of, it's another photo with the product, but just in a different way. And you're kind of like, it's trying to work, like get into that gritty, exactly as you say, like who is the consumer that's watching this, and what is the value that they're getting from the post that you're putting out?
It's also really hard to detach from your own brand. And when you look at your own product, as a business owner of that product, you look at it and you think, oh, this looks brilliant. And it's really important, I think, to try and detach from that and almost look at the posts and the captions that you share or the videos you share and think, if I had no involvement in this brand, would I look at that and think, that's something I want to be part of, that's something I want to purchase? It's really difficult to do that, but I think that's a really valuable thing to do on each bit of content that you create.
I guess it's trying to tap into that kind of emotion of the consumer as well, so it goes further than this product's going to be really delicious. How are they going to use it? Where are they going to be seen? Do they see something where they go, oh fuck, I really want to live that moment, not necessarily eat that product, but that having a beer and a pack of crunchies, someone goes, oh yeah, I really want a beer and a pack. But it's the environment that's around rather than just
if you look at a pair of trainers, every single pair of sports trainers that are released serve the same function. They all are there to improve your running and to hopefully support your feet, but there are brands that serve the same function of delivering that product, but market it in such a cool way and be able to speak to their community in a tone of voice that they know is going to resonate with them, and then they get the purchase. So I think social media is really tough at the moment, and I do feel for a lot of the brands, especially the ones I speak to, where they're saying, oh, you know, we're putting out content every day and we're still not getting it. But it took me 7 years to build my following now.
Yeah.
on my London Fitness Guy account, and that's been 7 years of posting every single day. Honestly, I think I've probably taken 20 days off posting in 7 years.
Wow.
And consistency is what gets results, and you learn from posting every time you do it of what, well, that worked well, that was quite cool, that got a good reaction. And once you can get that formula and build that community, that is the formula.
It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. And I think what's really interesting to kind of just drive home this point, like, to you, this is going to sound very obvious, but your pages and your accounts are an element. I know that there's a huge amount that I want to get into here, and we don't just want to focus on social media, but your accounts are an element of your business, right? So when brands reach out and expect sort of people with huge followings to do a post or a story and then get pushed back with, this is how much I charge, the credibility behind it is because it's taken 7 years of every single day posting and building that up, right?
And it's a very much a two-way process for me, at least anyway. You know, I work with brands like Techno Gym, I work with Fitbit, I've worked with them for 5 years now, which is mad.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And most recently I have a clothing range with Next, which I'm really proud of, which I'm sure we'll talk about throughout. But it's really about finding the brands that I feel connected to and I feel like I want to share, because I feel like it would be doing a disservice to the people that have stuck with me from day one of posting a terrible picture on Instagram. You know, sometimes I actually look back at what those first posts were, and I remember creating them, and they had a little border around a picture, and it said London Fitness Guy at the bottom.
Yeah.
And I did that border on every photo, terrible photos of food, me doing an awful selfie after a run or something like that.
Yeah.
I look back at them now and think, I'm really happy I did that, because I stuck at that for a long time. I used to go on walks in the morning with my sister and say, I'm gonna do it. One day I'm gonna get to where I want to get, and look at these. This is where I want to aspire to.
Yeah.
And I look back now, I'm like, I actually can't believe I managed to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
amazing.
And it's not come from a talent so much, but consistency. Belief and passion.
That's everything in life, right? Be it. A fitness business, be it a food business, be it a tech business, it's just that kind of everyday grind of like, do it, learn better. And like, London Fitness Guy has now turned into a fucking big brand. Like those first posts that were on Instagram are now, it's now a brand, you know, as you say, you're like everything with the Next campaign, like everything that's come into that, it's like an amalgamation of everything that's then moved that on to where it's become.
The world's changed, and you know, it's a lot more acceptable to lift out your phone walking down the road and do an Instagram story or something. But I remember back when I first started doing that sort of stuff, my mates used to message me and be like, mate, what are you doing? Like, this, you need to stop doing that. But you know, it's
amazing. My sister's just started a travel Instagram with her husband.
Nice.
I'll give her a little plug. They're called Bougie Bear, and they've gone after that kind of falling in love with each other type content, which is great. And I think there's clearly a huge market. They've been up and running for about probably about a month now. Yeah, a month, 6 weeks, and they've got that sort of 5,000-6,000 follower count. So like,
nice.
Growing pretty quickly. They found their kind of niche, but I'm exactly the same. I just get fed up of seeing my sister snogging her husband. Like,
yeah, it must be quite weird.
Stop it.
For you, like, yeah. Well, you know, that's awesome.
It's great, man. And I think it's a really interesting one. So just sort of before we move on, I just want to sort of make sure that we're giving our listeners some good kind of tangible takeaways. In terms of accessing influencers and kind of building a strategy around business to kind of get products across to influencers, like, what are your sort of three top line tips? Like, finding the right influencers is obviously a given, right?
But
what are the kind of top tips around that?
I think if from my own perspective now, I would have an idea of the creators I like and look at the content they share and think to myself, does that link to my own brand ethos? I would make a list of some of those guys, girls, whoever it might be, and then ask them to create a content strategy they think would work well.
Yeah.
And that's what I would do. I don't think brands really do that enough. I would send through a document and say, we'd love to work with you. whether it's paid or gifted, whatever it might be. Would love you to write down a strategy or of a piece of content you would like to share and assess based on that.
Yeah.
Because it's the ideas and the content that gets the reach, not just the creator you're working with.
If
you can almost get people to storyboard the content before they've made it, you can visualize that and say, God, that's going to look great. Yeah. And also you want to be able to share that on your own channels because it's content you've paid for and you want to be able to push that across and make sure it matches your own brand ethos so you can share that, you know?
And I think it's one thing I completely agree. And I think as well, the as a small business, one thing we've sort of done over the last couple of years is we've just like blanket send out giftings to people that we think work alongside our type of brand. But one thing we're starting to come onto now is like, actually, if we're investing in this channel, it needs to be exactly like that. Because I think that's when you get pushback and someone says, oh, I'm going to charge, I don't know, anything from kind of 200 to like 25 grand for a post. Mm-hmm. And they're like, whoa, that's expensive. But it's because the strategy behind it hasn't been there, and therefore there's no value to what they're charging because you don't really know what the output is that you want.
And also, you got to think, how much would it cost you to create a really great piece of content?
Of course,
It would cost you, you know, a few hundred pounds for a videographer, a couple of days' work, maybe for planning, staff cost.
Yeah.
By the time you've ramped that up,
you
might as well collaborate with someone and cross share, and then you've got the content on both channels and the reach. So,
and sorry, I didn't mean like there's no value in it. I mean the brand doesn't understand what value they want to get out of it. Like what the output is, and I think there's a real key learning there.
What is it that you do want out of it? Is it brand awareness or is it sales? Because you know, there's a lot to be said for the brand awareness of seeing someone post something and you think, oh, that's nice. And then you go into a supermarket or wherever you might go and you see that product and you instinctively pick it up because you've got the brand association that you saw 2 days earlier. So, 100%. But you can't track that and you can't measure it. So it's very difficult.
But then something that's going to completely change the game, and we can't have a social media chat without talking about TikTok, is TikTok Shop, where And at the moment, it feels a little bit like the Wild West. Like we're setting up as a brand on TikTok Shop, and we're getting asked for certificates that like just don't exist. Like, we're getting asked for like food safety certificates that are for market stalls.
Yeah,
and like we're obviously not a market stall, right? And so we're like going back, being like, we don't have one of them. Yeah. Like, we can't go on TikTok Shop. We're like, all right, so but we can be sold on EasyJet, but we can't be sold on TikTok. Like,
I don't think anyone really understands TikTok.
But I feel like that will settle down, and then the measurability of that,
it
just changes the game, right? Because you can start going, actually, let's take, for example, London Fitness Guy, come on our account, we'll pay you X amount for a 2-hour live and just sell as much as you can sell. Yeah. And then you can start having that kind of...
I can't wait to do it, Harry.
Yeah. We'll have you back in here, mate. We'll get the lights up.
Get a TikTok Shop up and
amazing. So we've got loads to unpick. Going to move on. Talk to me about your next campaign, or the multiple campaigns that's come. Like, how did that come about, and what I guess that's come from building of London Fitness Guy and your wider kind of presence and your brand that now sits around you in the business.
Well, funny enough, I actually I've got a really bad obsession with fitness wear. I love it, and I always say to people who aren't motivated to work out, if you can, go and buy yourself a new pair of trainers or a new workout top, because I love doing that. And if I don't want to go for a run and I've got a new pair of trainers sat there, I'll go and get my trainers on and go for a run. I love that power that a new item can do.
I'm going to go straight on Amazon and order some new trainers.
So I was sat there and I was thinking, I really want to do my own clothing brand. And then the same month, I had an email come through from Next, and we had a few chats, almost like interviews, to see if I was the right fit and if I'd be interested. And then we're now in collection number 5, I think it is, which amazing. Is crazy over the last
and,
2 years.
And your face is on the walls in store, isn't it?
Unfortunately, like,
it's amazing. You've got a beautiful face there.
Oh, thank you, yeah. It's been great. I mean, I absolutely love the brand. They're just so great to work with. It's very rare you get an opportunity to work with a team and a brand that are just so in tune with you as well.
Yeah.
So I love doing the shoot days. They're long days. We just did one for the January edit now. And, you know, you only see the end product and the end picture or video, but it's quite often a 7 a.m. start and a 7 p.m. finish of shooting all day, running, boxing, whatever it might be. So they're full-on days, but there's nothing better than seeing those videos and pictures come through, and you go, "Whoa, yeah, like that looks great." And every time we've done it, it's just got better, and it's like also something we understand each other now to be able to create this this awesome campaign of cool fitness wear.
It's amazing, man, and the way that you've evolved into that is obviously unbelievable. That feels natural now, but like at the beginning, was it fucking scary when you're like, "I'm going for a shoot"? Well, maybe not for next, but like when those sort of things started coming in, were you like...
Well, I remember I did my first ever modelling job for Adidas, which is mental. Usually you kind of start off with something, I don't know, let's see, you know, in your bedroom for something or whatever.
On Untold Podcast. Like
But I did this first job for Adidas, which was a global campaign for a pair of trainers. And it was a 4 a.m. start time because we wanted to get the shots in of running in the morning before, you know, the sun was up and we had sunrise and so on. It was an incredibly cold morning. And I remember walking in and being like, "I'm so out my depth." We had models and I was there on my first job.
Yeah.
And I actually came out of it, I was like, "I'm not sure that is for me."
Yeah.
I was like, "Great experience, but I'm probably going to cut back on that and have a massive high moment, 100% hit rate with Adidas, and I'm done." I had castings come up and I was a bit like, "Oh, I don't know if I want to do this sort of thing." I felt very uncomfortable. And then with these shoots, I don't want to say I've perfected the art of modelling, because I definitely haven't, but I've definitely got more comfortable as each shoot has gone on. I've worked with some awesome photographers and videographers who have really helped me to understand how to do it. And I just took it for granted. I thought it was just standing in front of a camera, smiling or whatever, but it's really hard. I mean, if you take your iPhone and put it in front of you and look like deadpan at the phone, you look like a thumb. Yeah. And that is kind of what I look like. When I first did it.
Yeah.
So now it's got a lot better. I'm definitely more comfortable, and the team have been great to help me ease into that.
Yeah, amazing, man. Oh, it's super exciting. So there's a huge amount here where it's kind of now come to fruition. But as you know, when I'm told, we try and pick out some of the sort of tougher times there. Talk me through a moment in your career so far where you've gone, "Fuck, this is really quite tough," and how you've kind of then come out of that the other side.
I think it's probably been the last 2 years.
Yeah,
I think that of all this, my 7 years being self-employed and working for myself, and moving out of working into a normal job, which I did for 5 years.
Yeah,
this last year and a half has been my most challenging time. I've set up a program called Power, which is my workout program, and it's a subscription model. And I think any subscription model is fundamentally the same. You're trying to get people to part with their hard-earned money every single month and give you that trust and want your product and use it every single month. And it's been the real development for me, from not just being about social media, not just being about personal training and a lot of the one-to-one, face-to-face stuff, but now operating a business and being the person that does the newsletters, the video editing, the shooting of the video, buying the cameras, learning how to shoot on YouTube. I mean, I can't tell you how many hours I spent on YouTube learning how to master camera settings, audio, edit. And at the moment, I feel like I'm at that point where I'm doing so many jobs, I'm desperate to bring other hands in to be able to take some of that away. But you know, you need to build it up to a point where you're happy to do that. And I've got some amazing team members on there who deliver coach sessions as well. So there's five coaches on there now, which is awesome.
Amazing.
And then the app comes out next month. And for me, it's been a real journey from January to now to test product, change the website, tweak the copy, you know, do all those little things. It's almost like having a shop front and doing all that stuff to work out what appeals to the end customer.
Yeah.
And now I'm finally at this point where I've reinvested back into app development, and the app comes out in November, which hopefully will take it to the next level, you know?
Yeah.
But it's been tough. It's been a real... There have been many a night where I've thought to myself, should I sack this off? Should I give this up?
Yeah,
and just having a social media following doesn't give you success, and it doesn't give you sales. And, you know, people think, "Oh, you've got 500,000 followers. You must be bringing 500,000 subscribers," or, you know, people on your program, it's not like that.
No.
The battle is still just as tough. You might have a bigger reach, but it's still tough to convert people to a sale.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. I've always the subscription model is kind of the holy grail, right? Because once you've got your customers in, you can kind of start forecasting what sales are going to look like
but for the first year you can't, because you don't really have any lifetime value on the customer. So I mean, if you think about it, I try and link it back to a lot of gym memberships, where you typically retain someone for 3 months. But I mean, I'm really grateful I've had people still on, I've got a bunch of people still on the program who started in January. So that retention's been really strong, but it's tough in that first year. It's very tough to calculate how long people are going to stay on a program for. And for me, the biggest thing I do is try and get feedback from as many people as I can. I'm not so fussed about the positives. I want the negatives.
Oh mate, it's so
all
key.
The time.
Oh yeah, it's so key, because that's the only way you learn, right? I think, like, we went through similar when we first launched, and people were like, yeah, this is great. And it's like, if people had just been honest with us initially, it would have helped to move it forward. And you're so bang on. I think that there's a kind of, there's a real stigma around negative feedback from people that haven't been and done something from the ground up themselves. Mm. And I think it's kind of maturity and evolution of doing it, where you go, it's not about a thick skin anymore. Like, you're not going to hurt my feelings. Yeah. If anything, you're helping me, because you're not going to listen to every bit of feedback you get. You look at it on a macro level, like, on an individual basis, Joe Blogg's telling you that the font size is too big. Mm. You're going to ignore, right? But if 15, 20, 30,000 people say, actually, it's too big. You're then like, we should probably sort of bring this down
and
a bit.
And, you know, that feedback, I made a thing of FaceTiming 10 people from the program, from different genders, ages, locations, to get their feedback. And to be fair, most of it was very positive, but I really tried to tap into how could this be better.
Yeah.
And every month, I was actually saying to someone the other day, is it ever going to get to a point where I'm not thinking, how do I make this better? This is great. At any point, I just don't think it ever will.
No.
I just don't think it will.
Like, if you do, like, it's like anybody that's growing or building a business. Like, if you're at 10, like, no one's ever going to be at 10 because you're always going to, even Coca-Cola, they're not at 10 because they can always change, be better, build it, and kind of move on.
I think what's been great, though, actually, is building up face-to-face connections with members or people who purchase your subscription, because it's all, when you launch a business, you always kind of look at that profile of that customer, and it's great for me because I can actually see them.
You kind of draw them up in your head, this is what they look like,
this is, you know, you profile them, and for me it's actually great because I take those people, I FaceTime them, and I get who you are, I get what you're about, I get why you joined.
Yeah.
So then, you know, if someone's way off and they're not like that person at all, they're probably not going to join. So that's cool. They're probably going to do someone else's program.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
But now I can really hone in on who it is I'm speaking to.
I think that's such a key point, because we've been through quite a big project recently, which is sort of finding out our why and profiling our consumer. And initially I was kind of a little bit like, for fuck's sake, this is a bit like overly marketing kind of, and now that we've done it, we're all just as a team completely aligned on who to go after. And I think for listeners listening, whether it be a service, be it a product-based business, like, know who it is that you're going after, because every single decision you make as a business after that is affected by that.
Yeah. And I read something that said, give your profile a name.
Yeah.
Right. And I thought, that's weird. But I mean, thankfully, I take the profiles of the people and I know their name. So now when I'm trying to speak to someone, I pitch that person. I say, I'm speaking to Sam.
This is
who I'm speaking to here. I'm speaking to John, who's 50, just got back into fitness. That is what it's about, to try and nail your
it's
sales
so
piece.
Good. And I think we've just done that, and ours is Charlie. And like, it goes into that detail where it's like, where does Charlie shop? What's he wearing?
Yeah,
like, where does
he
drink at the weekend?
Yeah.
What does he eat? What does he like? And then you can start. And actually, this fits into the piece that we were speaking about, just for food brands and founders or everyone that's listening, is when targeting your influencers, utilize this piece to see if the consumers that your ideal consumers are the people that they're talking to.
Exactly, right? Yeah, for sure.
And it
for
kind sure. of does, like, there's quite a nice loop there to sort of bring
yeah.
bring the two together.
Yeah, 100%.
Hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Untold Podcast is brought to you by The Savourists. We're here to keep you jiggling at snack time. We have a range of mega flavour, loaded ingredient, real nutritious snacks. They taste absolutely banging. And we have a brand new range of crunchets, which are made from black beans, edamame beans, puffed rice, seasoned with a Thai chili and a sizzling barbecue. Yes, I promise you, they are as delicious as they sound. Thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the episode and check us out at savourists.com. Ta-da! So talk us in a little bit more detail about what the app does and how it could help some of the listeners. Yeah. I know you're sort of moving into a lot of kind of B2B stuff now as well. Like, talk us through what that looks like.
So, well, Powell was created in January this year. Really is a way of delivering accessible workouts, but also mental benefit fits as well. And I almost call it the platform for your body and mind.
Yeah.
So we have strength workouts, which, just as a FYI, everyone should be doing. It's like the best thing you can do, not just for your body, but for longevity and living longer. strength.
Note to self.
Yep. So you've got strength workouts, HIIT workouts, which are kind of short 30-minute cardio blitzes that you can do with just your body weight from anywhere you go. We've got yoga on there to help you unwind after a stressful day, and short meditations, which are 5 to 10 minutes, just to really help you either de-stress, get ready for bed, take a moment out from your day. And that's really the four pillars of Power.
Great.
So this all follow along. I take people through the workouts, which are 30 to 40 minutes in almost, I say real time. Obviously, it's not real time. It's pre-recorded.
Yeah,
it's in real time. So I teach you techniques. I motivate you through it, hopefully. And I guide you through everything. And there's programs on there you can follow. So that's the program in a nutshell of what Power is all about.
Yeah.
It moves to an app in November when this has come out, which is
amazing.
Nice. So if you're interested, please do hit me up.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's off now.
Yeah, catch you there. And then a big element for us really is working with businesses to how we can improve employee health and well-being and mindset.
Great.
I think it's always been a bit of a tick box, I think, for a lot of corporates.
Yeah.
And I really feel like we need to move it away from being a tick box to actually an essential part.
Oh, mate, 100%.
Not just for the employee, but for the community it builds. I just think, I love the idea of people coming in to their workplace saying, did you do that? Did you do that workout, London Fitness Guy? That's what makes me tick.
Yeah.
I love that.
And that's what I want. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it's such a key piece on culture and sort of integrating culture and building culture from small businesses from the off is for founders, quick wins to really bring in. And I'm not saying it's a quick win as in it's a tick, but it's a quick win. They can bring in an app and integrate that into the culture of the business and as an employee perk, right?
Yeah.
That then allows them to.
Yeah.
We're running an event in November for Movember on the 17th of November downstairs in the office, and we've got Harry who runs people at Itsu. He's their sort of group director of people.
Nice.
And then also Harry Corrin, who is a mental health first aid trainer for businesses. And then Teddy from Perfect Ted and myself on a panel talking about how to integrate culture. And I think this is such a key part of it, because when we're speaking about the mental health side and the benefits of exercise, but also the benefits of kind of community and being able to just do a workout anywhere because it's on your phone. You don't have to, like, you can implement this when the team is a size of three. It doesn't need like a 5-star gym downstairs with leather seats. It's like, this is a quick kind of right, everyone up,
exactly.
Get, have a shakeout, do a bit of yoga and get back to work.
Exactly that. I mean, you know, people come into the office and they talk about the football over the weekend or the rugby or whatever it is it might be. And that's how I feel I would love it to be with fitness, where people come in and they say, great run we had last week, love that. You know, that kind of feel. And if you have like any sort of community club feeling in your workplace, of course it's going to build a stronger relationship between your employees. It has to, because you're doing group activity together. It's a no-brainer.
Amazing. No, it's super, Super exciting, man. So the app's that'll be live November, right?
The app is live in November, and it'll be soft launched initially to the members that are on there. And obviously January is a big time in fitness, so it'll really be about ironing out any issues up until January for the hard launch.
Yeah,
then.
Yeah.
So
crazy.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
a good
that's
time.
Amazing. And there's a lot of noise around January and fitness. Obviously, I mean, every year I'm like, I'm a sucker for it. I'm like, January is the time. January.
That's when you
time.
Recruited me in, I think.
That's it. Yeah, it was.
Well, it was
I'm going to be calling you again.
Board, like, yeah, every year, Harry. Yeah. January, Harry. Come on.
I remember there was a time where we... James is a brilliant PT. I just wasn't at the right stage of life to be taking it seriously, because I'd do kind of Monday to Wednesday.
Tuesday.
Eating healthy. And I'd exercise quite a lot, but I'd just be on the pints from sort of Thursday, Friday.
You did love a pint.
Saturday.
It was before the session at 7 a.m, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Disclaimer, that did not happen. But then sort of got into that routine of being like, well, I'm healthy Monday to Wednesday. Why is nothing happening? And then you're like, well, Wednesday to Sunday is the majority of the week. But... I can't really remember where I was going with this. Yes, I remember. And James sat me down, and I remember it so clearly. We just finished on the rowing machine, and I'm fucking blowing. And I remember you being like, mate, if you're not going to take this seriously, like, we're probably going to have to finish these sessions.
You're so right. The hardest part,
because
I must be
a nightmare client for
well,
you.
It's with any client that doesn't put the effort in, it's actually not me.
No, of course it's not.
No, as in, like, I could sit there and I would no disrespect, I would take your money,
yeah, of course,
and do the session, but I don't want that. I want you know, if you're coming in and you're not really feeling it, you either get a different PT that you might reignite with, or you sit
take
down
it seriously.
You take it seriously. So I always am like, you know, if you're going to come to a session, don't come at 7 a.m. and not want to do it. Come at 7 a.m. and be raring to go
and be pumped. Yeah, and that's why I bring it up, because it's all in light-hearted jest at myself. But I think that's sort of there's loads of stuff that we've unpacked in here, and I think I would like to go on to talk about bringing it back into the kind of mental health piece and using exercise to switch off.
I should really explain kind of my own personal background on mental health, if that's a key focus point as well. I mean, I think it was 3 years ago now, 3 or 4 years ago, before COVID, so maybe 4 years ago, and I signed up to do the London Marathon, which was amazing, but very challenging, and it was a really hot day. It was actually the hottest London Marathon on record.
Yeah.
And I remember running through the streets of London with the sun beaming down. They had, like, showers and everything down the side because it was so hot, and I just finished London Marathon. And I crossed the line, looked at my phone, and it died in front of my eyes. And, you know, you just think, oh, I've got no battery. And then it suddenly dawned on me, I had no cards, no way of contacting anyone, just seas of people. And I'm sure that wasn't the reason, but it was a trigger for me to have my first panic attack. And I remember I didn't know where anyone was, and I just went over to St. John's Ambulance and checked myself in. And I said, look, I think I'm having a heart attack.
Yeah.
I said, I don't know what's going on. It, you know, my vision went. My heart was pounding, and they put the heart rate monitor on my finger, and it was something like 180. And I was just sat there.
Yeah.
I remember being like, "This is not good." And then since then, I had 2 years really battling with anxiety to the point where, you know, I thought I was going insane. Honestly, I thought I was watching a film one night, Lion, which is a great film.
Yeah.
But I was sat there and I honestly thought someone was going to have to come and take me away and check me into rehab or something, because I didn't know what was going on. I thought I was going insane. And then, you know, I've spent 2 years now with a therapist and whatnot on and off. And now I've learned to manage those triggers a lot better, so that I kind of dodge most of the knock-on effects. But it's for sure still there. And especially when you have work stress, it's a really important time to be aware of those triggers and do what you can to try and help yourself, really.
Oh, mate, I've got so much admiration for you, the way that you speak about this. And I've seen you speak about it on your social channels as well. Like, you don't shy away from it, which I think is the most amazing thing. And that's sort of exactly what we want to get over Untold as well is that, like, speaking about it helps, right? Like,
yeah, and you know, I think it's really difficult to understand what it's like to go through a mental health issue like anxiety if you haven't gone through it yourself.
Yeah.
But what's really scary about it is, and I went to a speech actually by a guy called Gabor Mate, who does a lot of trauma, and not trauma like, you know, being hit by a car, but trauma that you pick up through your younger years of life, yeah, that shows itself in your later years of life, and you don't know when that's going to hit you. And for me, it just came out of the blue, and I don't know what the trigger was. I don't know what my trauma was that caused that to happen. But yeah, you know, in 10 years time, you could just have a stressful period and you get anxiety, and that's the start of your battle with it.
Oh, yeah.
So without trying to scare people, you know,
I've been through it as well. Like I had a panic attack. I've had multiple panic attacks. It with it not recently, but probably about 5 years ago, funnily enough, probably coinciding with setting up the business. But
yeah,
and I remember one time being in Edinburgh. I went to Edinburgh for the weekend with girlfriend at the time, now wife, and I had exactly the same, where I was like, fucking hell, I'm having a heart attack, and like I ended up flagging down a cab and being like, take me to the nearest hospital now.
Yeah.
And did exactly the same, wired me up, did all that stuff, and they were like, look, you're fine, you're gonna be okay. Had therapy, did exactly the same sort of journey. And I think it's so important to speak out about it, because it affects an unbelievable amount of people. And if everyone knows that it affects, like, when we first met, I would never ever think you were the sort of person that would have a panic attack.
Yeah. Because
in my mind, I'm like, he's this confident guy that's out there, but everyone, where I'm going with this is everybody has their own struggles, right?
Yeah. And again, it comes back to what we initially started talking about, of learning a new skill, doing your fitness, doing something that helps you unwind after a long day, not checking your emails first thing in the morning. All those things build into a much bigger picture of preserving your mental health.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm definitely not perfect. Some mornings I get up, the first thing I do is scroll Instagram. I've been scrolling for half an hour, and I think, shit, it's 7:30 in the morning. I've wasted half an hour of my day scrolling in the morning.
Yeah.
Worst thing you can do. But I try and implement certain things and try and be in tune now with my body to recognize when I perhaps need to pull it back a little bit, or get back into doing golf, or get back into doing tennis, or something that's going to help get outside, go for a walk, get, you know, something that's going to help.
Anything
that's
just
that
clears
space.
It, right? Like, yeah. I'm in a pretty bad cycle at the moment, where I mean, I'm now forcing myself to leave my phone in another room, and my wife's going to tell me that I don't do it enough. She listens to this. Not that she ever listens to it. Because the other day it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm such an early riser. I'm up at kind of 5:30, but then I'll be in bed by like 9:30.
Yeah.
On a weekly, like during the week, and then on the lash at the weekend. Joking.
No, you're not.
But during the week we have quite a strict routine, and I woke up at kind of 4 a.m. went to the loo and checked my phone. Worst mistake I could have done. It was when we were launching into Ocado. Something had gone wrong with the delivery. It's fine. We sorted it.
Yeah.
And 2 days later, you're like, oh my God, what was I even worrying about?
Yeah.
But it didn't go back to sleep.
Yeah.
And it's like Saturday morning. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like,
and you
your phone was in your other room.
You know it's a mistake, and you feel annoyed with yourself.
But
for
you
doing
can't
it.
Stop yourself from trying to fix it, right?
I had the similar thing. I the best thing I've done is turn email notifications off. So I don't ever get an email notification. I manage my emails now at my own time. So I'll go onto my emails and check them, spend that time doing it. So I couldn't tell you if I've got an email come through. And
that's such a clever...
I'm quite happy to reply a day late if it means that it helps
you're
me.
You're looking after your mental health. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's I'm just conscious of your time, but there's so much in therapy. I just kind of want to get your take on it. I think in the UK we're getting better, but I think there's still a stigma around it. I think you look at the US and a perk of your job is a good therapist, right? Mm. Whereas in the UK there's still a little bit of stigma around going to see a therapist. I'm such a huge advocate for it. What give me a kind of like roundup of your experience with it and how it helped you on more of a kind of macro level rather than like the conversation.
Yeah, well, I guess I was actually chatting to a friend of mine who uses the same therapist, and he's actually just gone back to using him now. I always say to him, it's bizarre that I would give the answers to my own questions to a therapist.
Yeah.
And I'd come away from sessions being like, I've given him the answers, but I couldn't pluck them out myself.
Yeah.
And that, for me, is what therapy is about. It's about, you know why you feel anxious or feel down or stressed, but sometimes you just need to speak to someone and get it, say it from yourself.
Yeah.
To really recognise it. And they just seem to ask the right questions to pull out the right responses to help you. And it was an amazing experience. Every time I had it, I felt, saying again to a guy earlier, I felt lighter after the session.
Oh my God, yeah, so yeah, I completely agree.
It was really good. And just puts things into perspective. If you're worrying about a job or, you know, worrying about something at work, it really allows you to see the bigger picture and go like, shit, you know, we could go and get run over tomorrow and we're wasting so much energy, time, worrying about something that is uncontrollable.
Yeah.
That was a lot of it for me.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I always talk about it as like a, not that I'm a gamer, but like if you play PlayStation and like you can press pause and get up and walk around and do all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Therapy for me was always like that pause button on life, but on life,
where
you kind of get a bird's eye view to be like, exactly what you say, answer questions. And then when you come back in and you press X, you're kind of like, you know exactly where you need to go.
Exactly. It's like you're in a map and the road is a lot clearer on the one you need to follow, you know?
Absolutely. So there's another one which I think resonates quite well around doorbells, bear with me. But like if someone comes to your door and they ring your doorbell and they just keep ringing your doorbell, you kind of like, and ignore it. You're like, okay, it's manageable, right? But if another person comes and there's two doorbells ringing, you're like, this is getting a bit annoying.
Yeah.
20 doorbells. Yeah. And it's unmanageable, right? Yeah. Whereas if you go and open the door and solve the issue that's causing that problem, you're slowly you're kind of getting rid of the doorbells again, and actually it's okay.
100%. It's just rewiring, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. So yeah, if there's any listener out there that's know that everyone goes through it and do reach out and make sure you get the support. There's absolutely no shame in that at all. And we'll have some over the course of November, we've got a couple of guests coming on that speak about it, and we'll also have some really good materials that can kind of help with this, as well as to where to go and where to find and all that sort of jazz. So we're recording this prior to November, so I don't have my tash out yet, but I will have a tash. Last year we did it and it got to the end of November and one of my best mates got married and I went to their wedding and I just like had this like massive tash, but didn't go to the barber to get it shaved. So it's just this kind of like lopsided tash by the end of it.
Talking of gaming, I can imagine you looking a bit like Mario and Luigi. Actually.
Yeah, yeah. We did a TikTok or an Instagram, whatever it was last year. And I think I've still got the Mario outfit.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
And we did one of those.
I'm surprised you're still married, actually.
I know, mate. I don't know how. We've got a little baby on the way as well. I don't know.
Congrats,
man. I feel very sorry for that poor little girl having me as her father.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're a great guy, Harry. So you know, that's lucky.
Wicked, man. Well, let's as we just start to wrap up, just I want to make sure that if people want to reach out and find you, how do they do it? The app, where is it? How can they download it?
Sure. So Instagram is London Fitness Guy. Or The Power, which is my workout program. If people want to reach out to me, they can reach out to me on Instagram, just slide in the old DMs, or drop me an email. It's completely up to you. I'm always open to the DMs. I'm usually checking them at 7 in the morning anyway. So. but yeah, you can check out The Power on www.thepower, and it's P-W-E-R.com, and see all the information on there. And if you're a business that's looking to bring any sort of well-being or holistic program into your workplace, then for sure get in contact. I'd love to come and work with your staff to improve staff morale, community, and health.
Amazing, man. Wicked. Well, look, James, thank you so much for coming on.
It's been a pleasure, mate. I've loved it.
Really appreciate it. And I think we're going to sort of head off and have a pint.
Yeah, let's do it. Only one, Harry, only one.
It is a Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, exactly. Thirsty Thursday. Let's do it.
Cheers, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Really appreciate it. If you enjoyed the episode, please do subscribe, download, share with your mates, your gran, your best mate, and one next door. If you didn't enjoy the episode, you've been listening to Hungry Podcast. joking. Dan Pope is a mate of mine, and he'll take that in good jest. Thank you so much. We love the support. Thank you for your time. We'll catch you next time. Ta-da. Thank you so much for giving us your time and listening. I really hope you've enjoyed. If you have enjoyed, please, please, please do download, subscribe, tell your friends' friends, tell your friend's mum's dog. It all really helps us grow the podcast, ultimately bring on more guests, which will be able to get us to give across more tangible takeaways. Thank you so much again. I'm Harry Turpin, your host, founder of The Savourists. We love you lots. Take care. Keep jingling.